It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. There's Fortnite, Grand Theft Auto, Call of Duty, Doom, and so many more. Violent video games are wildly popular, and they have been for decades. That means that generations of children and adults have played these games. And parents, teachers, gamers, and many others wonder, how do these games affect the people who play them? In the new book, Game On, Sensible Answers About Video Games and Media Violence, a team of research psychologists has pooled their resources in an attempt to answer all of our nagging questions about these games and other violent media. Two of those psychologists are with me now. Doug Gentile is a professor of psychology at Iowa State University. Hello, Doug.
Hi, Charity. I thought we were going to spend the hour talking about how cute your dog is.
Well, that's tomorrow's show.
Oh,
probably.
Man, I spent all night practicing, who's a good boy? Who's a good boy?
All right. I think I'll talk to Craig instead. Craig Anderson is also here. He is a distinguished professor of psychology at Iowa State University. Hello, Craig.
Hi, Charity. I can confirm that Doug has a notepad in front of him filled with questions about your dog.
Excellent. Well, this will be a different hour than I was planning, but let's start with my questions. The two of you have joined forces with a whole bunch of other psychologists to answer these questions, the kinds of questions that you get asked all the time. And the place you start in the book is really with explaining why you started doing this research. I think because a lot of people question your motivations. They assume that you're doing this research because you want to ban all violent media. But Craig, why don't you tell us why you started doing this kind of research?
Actually, I kind of backed into this area without really quite realizing what I was getting into. I was working on basic theoretical research about aggression and was in the process of trying to integrate a whole bunch of theoretical models into one simpler and comprehensive model. And it occurred to me while I was working on this model, which I called the general aggression model, that such a model needed to fully understand what we knew about media violence effects. I discovered that it was a huge research literature and started reading into it. And then on actually two separate occasions, one with an undergraduate student and later with a graduate student, I had students who were interested in doing a new research project but were kind of stumbling around, you know, thinking about, well, what should I do it on? And we started doing some media violence research because that just happened to be something I was interested in at the time. And after we got into it, it's turned out almost impossible to get away from the media violence literature.
Because there are so many questions to try to understand.
That's exactly right. There's so many questions and there's so much misinformation being given out by the media industries themselves, by, in some sense, consumers of violent media, of which I am one, and by a few I guess I should call them scientists, but who consistently denied, have made careers out of denying what are actually real effects that the research community in general recognizes and has recognized in multiple major reports.
Interesting. Well, Doug, how did you get involved in this?
Yeah, I sort of backed my way into it as well. I left academia entirely for many years. I went and did market research, and my favorite client when I was in market research was a little nonprofit organization called the National Institute on Media and the Family that was starting up in the mid-90s. And after a couple of years, they hired me away to be director of research. And in that role, it was my job to do studies that would answer the questions parents, educators, pediatricians, politicians had about media. And often, at that time in particular, the research on video games was really young. And so a lot of the questions were about gaming. A lot of them were about media violence. And so it was just, I was directed by my job that I had to answer these questions for parents.
You said, Craig, that you are a consumer of violent media. Doug, you have said the same thing in the past, and people do accuse you, especially gamers who are concerned about people trying to ban the games that they love, will accuse you of, you know, being out to get them or, you know, coming up with reasons why people shouldn't play these games. But you both approach this from a place of at least minimum fandom, right, Doug?
I suppose, you know, I've not only do I play many of these games myself, but I've voice acted for games. I have written code for games. I don't dislike them at all. I just think that we should be honest about what the effects are, the same way that we struggled for 50 years to get, you know, cigarette companies to be honest, to say, yes, this product can be dangerous. So now that you know that, you get to make an informed decision.
All right. Well, we'll get into some of the research and some of the things that we do know about violent media in a moment. But I want to talk for just a moment about something that I never bring up in interviews, which is the format of your book, which doesn't sound very interesting. But you have created a book that operates on two very different levels. You pose a question, you answer it in lay terms in really a relatively short paragraph, and then you answer it in a much longer form with the thoroughness of a psychology textbook. So where did the idea for bringing together this team of psychologists and putting such an unusual book together come from, Craig?
That's a good question. I've been thinking about doing such a book for over 15 years. And we've actually had a couple of false starts where we you know, write a few such questions and think about moving ahead, but then basically got distracted by something else that needed to be done. And
something shiny.
Shiny, exactly right. So, you know, other research projects themselves. But over time, it became clear that what was needed is a book that answers a lot of these frequently asked questions. But we didn't want to do just a simple kind of here's what we think kind of book. That is, we wanted to be sure that anyone who looks at the book can find the relevant research references if they want to on any particular question. And from the outset, I was thinking about how to best do this in an electronic format. Because that allows you to provide internal links. So if someone finds a particular question interesting, but it's related to some other questions, we provide links in the electronic version of the book. So, you know, you can click on the link and go to that question. You can find more detailed answers, or you can find less. You know, go to the short answers. If what you really want is advice for, you know, right now, what do I do with my kids or things like that. We actually went through several different titles before we came up with this one. One was FAQs about media violence. One of my favorites that we eventually discarded, when I say we, I mean I was voted down, was everything you wanted to know about media violence, but were afraid to ask, you know, after the old movie about sex. But it was probably a good idea to vote that one down. But like I said, we've been working on this for, you know, basic idea for a long time, and it finally came together when Courtney Plant, who is the first author on this book, came to Iowa State as a postdoctoral student. And you know, one of his tasks, I'm not sure whether he selected it or whether I assigned it, but was to look into creating such a book. And he essentially created the format that the final version has in it.
And I think it's a really, you know, smart format, because this is a topic people have been interested in for a long time, as you mentioned at the show start. But and the problem is, we know lots about it, And that's a problem because where does all that knowledge go? It goes into dusty academic journals. And so no one learns about it, or if you actually find them, the problem is scientists talk like scientists. And so we are not always the easiest to understand, not always able to put it in nice, clear terms that everyone can understand. And so this book...
And that's where my wife comes in. She points out to all of us that we're not normal people.
And so this book was really, especially the short answers are an attempt to just in clear, plain language, here's what we know, here's what we don't know.
Let's define our terms a little bit here, and then we'll get into some of those answers that you have. But when we talk about violent media, I think people understand what we're talking about when we talk about violent video games. But you've also studied the effects of other kinds of violent media. So define that for me. What are we talking about?
The best definition of violent media, the way most media researchers use it, is that it's a media in which characters intentionally try to harm other characters. It does not require blood and gore and screams and and that's where there's a lot of misinformation. Including misinformation or misunderstanding by some researchers in the community to think, violent media have to have all, the blood and gore and, tissue hanging out with broken bones and all. No. You go back historically to television violent research. They were looking at children's cartoon shows, which if you do a frequency count, how often are characters harming other characters? Turns out children's cartoon shows in the past actually had the highest rate of harmful acts of violence. They were more harmful than the TV Western, so they had more violent media or more violent acts than any other type of show.
Right, like the Westerns where there were shootouts. But
you'd have maybe two or three shootouts in a half-hour show, but in a children's cartoon show, you might have 30 or 40 acts of violence in 30 minutes.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. With me, psychologists Doug Gentile and Craig Anderson of Iowa State University. We're talking about the effects of violent media. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about the influence of violent media on behavior. We're talking about violent video games and other kinds of violent media. The authors of a new book called Game On, Sensible Answers About Video Games and Media Violence are here today. Doug Gentile, a professor of psychology at Iowa State University, and Craig Anderson, a distinguished professor of psychology at Iowa State University. And Craig, just before the break, we were defining different kinds of violent media. Do you include books in that?
Some people do, but in our book, we focus solely on electronic media, or screen violence, so TV, movies, and video games. But there is a research literature, much smaller, on books. There's also a research literature on violence in music. And in even smaller literature on violence in music videos, all of them tend to converge on the same kind of answer that high exposure to such media increases the likelihood of inappropriate aggressive behavior. But most people, the effects are probably much smaller for print media because for a lot of reasons, and there really isn't that much concern either in the research community or in the general public about printed, classic stories or novels or whatever. Most of the concern, and I would agree that most of the concern really is with the faster paced screen media violence.
Now, you just said aggressive behavior. And so I think that it's also important for us to talk about what you actually study. And Doug, why don't you tackle this one? We talk about violent video games. We talk about violent media, but you are not looking at, you know, whether playing a violent video game where you shoot people turns you into a shooter. You're looking at how it changes your behavior. So I think we probably need to break down the definition of aggressive behavior versus violent behavior and tell us what you actually are looking for, Doug.
Yeah. And this is an important distinction, that, you know, what is the distinction between aggression and violence? And aggression, as Craig already mentioned, is properly defined as any behavior. So that could be a verbal behavior, something you say. It could be a relational behavior, a way you manipulate other people. Or it could be a physical behavior that's intended to harm the other person, and the victim would prefer not to be harmed. And that's a pretty clean definition. You know, accidents, therefore, are not aggression. Acts of God, not aggression. Most sports, not aggression, because it requires an intent to harm. Now, violence is a real special subtype of aggression. It's physical only, and it's extreme, such that if successful, it would result in severe bodily damage or death. Now, most people experience a fair amount of aggression in a given week. People, you know, this is in the form of sarcasm and snarky comments. It's in the form of road rage behaviors or obscene gestures or, the cold shoulder, having rumors spread. Kids are, do things that are pretty easy to label this way, such as, I'm having a party and you're not invited. All of those are true aggression, and they are truly harmful. And that's the type of aggression that most people actually come into contact with in their lives, and that's what I tend to study, is this, you might think of as playground-level aggression. And partly because that's where I think most of the action is, that media violence is not going to take a normal kid and turn them into a mass shooter. It's not that big an effect, thank God. to be able to do something that extreme, you need multiple risk factors, not just one like media violence. And media violence isn't the biggest. It's not the smallest. It's about the same size if you go by, say, the 2001 U.S. Surgeon General's report on media violence or on youth violence. It's right in there about the same size as coming from a broken home. And so it's not going to push a kid totally over the edge. What happens is it starts changing the way you see the world. It starts changing the way you think. It changes what you think would be an appropriate response when you are provoked. And so it just subtly shifts the odds that you are more willing to respond aggressively when provoked.
There are people who say, okay, if you look at the correlation between people who use this kind of media and people who are more aggressive, you're going to find it. But maybe the people who are drawn to this kind of media were more aggressive in the first place, a chicken egg kind of argument. But you've actually been able to study that and tease that out, right?
Yes. That certainly is the first sort of obvious thing for scientists to look at, and in fact, scientists have been looking at that question for over 50 years now. And what we find in lots of different studies is that the exposure to media violence does increase. It essentially causes an increase in the likelihood of aggressive behavior, both in the short term, that is the media situation, and in the long term. There is also some evidence that people who are more aggressive by, whether you want to call it by nature, personality, or whatever, tend to be more attracted to violent media. So it sort of looks like both directions are causal, both directions are true, but the evidence supporting media violence as a cause of later aggression is, the evidence for that is much stronger than the evidence that violent people are simply drawn to violent media.
You also see that there is a gender breakdown in really when you look at violent video games specifically and who is drawn to violent video games. And there can be a million different reasons for that. But we do see that males engage with this kind of media more often than females do. But you've also looked at that and to see what kind of effect this has on both males and females, because some people will come at you and say, well, you know, this is men have too much testosterone. They're just more violent by nature. Again, this isn't the video games. This is a chicken or egg kind of question as well. So how do we see gender playing into this effect?
Well, you just mentioned a couple of the other important risk factors, you know, biological sex, amount of testosterone. These are things that are also related to the likelihood of aggression. And you could imagine that perhaps you know, boys, therefore, are more susceptible to the effect or are more vulnerable to an effect of other risk factors, such as media violence exposure. So this is one of the surprises for me in my career, is that I think I expected to find that some types of kids are more influenced than other types of kids. And you could do this along lines of male-female. You could do it along lines of age, such as you think younger kids maybe are more vulnerable. You could think maybe already aggressive kids are more vulnerable. You might think that maybe American kids are more vulnerable to than, say, Japanese kids. This is not what we find. It's not that some studies don't have hints here and there, but they're so few and so sporadic that they kind of look like within the margin of error. So to take your specific question, yes, boys are much higher likelihood to want to play violent video games, and they are also much higher likelihood to be physically aggressive, whereas girls tend to be more relationally aggressive. But what we find is the same size of the effect, that when girls do play these games or when they do watch a lot of media violence, those tend to be the girls who hit. Those are the girls who are more willing to be relationally aggressive as well. So the effect seems the same. And at first this surprised me until I realized, what are we talking about here? We're talking about learning. What you practice, you get better at. You practice being vigilant for enemies. You practice responding aggressively when provoked. Then you're going to get better at that. And do boys and girls learn differently? No. Do Japanese kids and American kids learn differently? No. Do aggressive kids and non-aggressive kids learn differently? No. It's just how the brain works all across the world. And so, in a sense, it's a dose-response effect, that to the extent you practice it more, you're going to learn it better.
I'm talking with Doug Gentile and Craig Anderson. They are two of the authors of Game On, Sensible Answers About Video Games and Media Violence. And you are welcome to join our conversation with your questions. I know a lot of people have a lot of questions about this topic. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we have this question from Sean. Why do video games get targeted as being a bad influence so much more than movies and TV? And is that fair or accurate? And I think historically speaking, I don't know that video games have been targeted a whole lot more, but that's what seems to be the most popular right now. But why do you think we focus so much on video games?
Well, it's actually an interesting question, and it's one that does come up fairly frequently. I would say, first of all, that they're not actually targeted more. They receive more research attention now than in the past because, well, first of all, they didn't exist 20 years ago when a lot of the research was being done on TV and movie violence. Also, the answer to whether or not screen violence, TV violence in, say, movies, has an impact, that was answered clearly some 30 years ago. And so for that reason, researchers aren't particularly interested in rehashing what several hundred studies have already found. In fact, you can't get published that way. Interestingly, when I first started doing video game research, my co-authors and I had a hard time getting some of our initial studies published because reviewers and journal editors often said, well, isn't this just the same thing that we already know from the television and movie violence literature? And to some extent, the answer is yes, it is the same. And that's also one of the reasons why it was very, very difficult and continues to be difficult to get research funding on video game effects, violent video game effects, is because the research community sort of says, well, we already know all this, so why should we spend scarce resources studying it again? So again, back to the original question, video games haven't really been singled out any more than other forms by the research community. Now, parents are more concerned about it now, in part because their kids are spending so much time on video games. It's become such a dominant part of their life that you know, that's the reason why we get a lot of questions about violent video games, you know, from parents and child welfare groups and so on. We hardly ever get questions about TV or movie violence anymore.
And I'll give the cynical answer too. Greg gave a nice reasoned answer. I think that there, you know, in the country, we have not had the political will to actually look at how to stop violence. You know, after every major school shooting, you know, there's a hue and a cry, and the strategy seems to be, and it does seem to me at this point to be pretty strategic, is that the gun industry will say, look, it's video games are the problem. And the video game industry will say, no, it's mental health that's the problem. And the mental health industry will say, no, it's access to guns that are the problem. And they divide and conquer. And we always ask the question, what was the cause of this school shooting? And the minute we've asked that question, we've lost, because the operative word there is the. There is no single cause for almost any human behavior. We're much more complicated creatures than that. And by asking the question that way, it allows us to do nothing while we look like we're really concerned about the problem. So here we have the coronavirus, which has, you know, killed a handful of people in the U.S., and we're doing all sorts of things to reduce it, whereas gun violence, you know, kills thousands of people every year, and we continue to do nothing about it. And it's partly because we have people who say, well, you know, it's video games, and that just allows the spiraling of blame so that nothing ever actually happens.
I want to bring up another point. Speaking as a parent, you know, I have a teen and a tween, and for me, the idea of them playing a game where they are role-playing violent behavior, where they are the violent actor in the game or one of the violent actors in the game, just feels more concerning to me than watching something passively that is violent. You have research about that. Does that sort of role-playing part of a violent video game change how the violence affects you?
That's an interesting question, and I wish I had a clear answer. We've speculated for a long time that video games are at least somewhat different from TV and movies in that, as a consumer, you have to assume the role of a particular character, and as that character, you must behave aggressively or violently within the game in order to advance in the game. And we've thought that, well, that probably leads to better learning or faster learning of the attitudes and beliefs and decision-making processes that are ultimately related to increases in aggression in the real world. Unfortunately, it's very, very difficult to do research that specifically compares the effect of, say, a violent video game versus the effect of an equivalently violent, say, TV show. And the key word there is equivalently violent. How do you define, you know, again, this is the kind of picayune stuff that researchers muddle over.
I've been muddled. We love to argue over that stuff.
Yeah, yeah, we've argued over that for well over a decade. You know, how do we do this? And there isn't a clear answer, and there probably isn't one correct answer to how do we compare those effect sizes in a clean and theoretically appropriate way.
That said, to the extent that where the research is a little clearer is when people identify with the character. And this is true whether it's video game or a TV show or a movie. They do tend to learn more from that character, adopt that character's attitudes and such. And so it has a bigger effect if you identify with the character. And maybe that happens a little more with games, but we're really not sure yet.
We're going to take another short break. We'll be back in just a moment. Doug Gentile and Craig Anderson are here with me today. They're two of the authors of the new book, Game On, Sensible Answers About Video Games and Media Violence. You're welcome to join the conversation at 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about the effects of violent video games and other kinds of violent media on behavior. There's a new book out. It's called Game On, Sensible Answers About Video Games and Media Violence. A team of research psychologists has gotten together to create this book that answers pretty much all of the questions that parents, teachers, politicians, the general public, other gamers have about how these games affect us or how this media affects us. Doug Gentile is a professor of psychology at Iowa State University. Craig Anderson is a distinguished professor of psychology at Iowa State University. And we have this question from Angela in Des Moines. She says, in your book, have you explored the correlation between the degree of violence and realism in violent media, fantasy violence versus realistic violence, and the degree of aggressive behaviors that might result from exposure? And you explore that to a great degree. So what do we know about sort of fantasy, unrealistic violence versus more realistic violence?
It's another really good question. And of course, it's a frequently asked question. You might think that the effects would be much smaller if for more fantasy, more unrealistic violence. And in fact, we frequently get people saying, oh, I can tell the difference between fantasy and reality, therefore I'm not affected by violent media, violent video games. And while I wish that were true, the fact is that that is not true. In fact, we published a study actually in our first book that came out in 2007, our first book on violent video games, in which we had children, elementary school children, and college students come into a laboratory setting. They're randomly assigned to play either a violent children's game or a nonviolent children's game. And at a later point in time, were given the opportunity to behave aggressively. At least they thought they were behaving aggressively against another person. Well, it turns out that even the college students, even when they're playing children's clearly fantasy violent games, so one of the games we used involved these alien tomatoes attacking human-like characters. And it's all very cartoony. It's all very, you know, happy music. But even the college students showed an increase, roughly a 40% increase in aggressive behavior as a function of playing the violent fantasy game versus the nonviolent fantasy game. So, you know, bottom line is ability to distinguish fantasy from reality does not protect people from the effects of violent media.
There are parts of violent media that also have kind of a pro-social message. I think one of the most violent films that I have ever seen in my entire life was Saving Private Ryan, but nobody would condemn that as being a violent movie for the sake of violence. Is there a difference when you experience violence in media if there's a different message to the violence?
Yes, definitely. And it's And this is part of the nuance that often gets lost in this conversation, that not all violence is, you know, media violence is the same, and it doesn't all have the same effect. And in a movie like that, it's telling the truth about violence, which is that violence damages not just the victim, but also the perpetrator, also the victim's families and the perpetrator's families, and the ripples extend out and, you know, across a wide network of people, and then kind of forever it damages you. And when you see the reality of it, it doesn't glamorize it. It doesn't, no one walks out of Saving Private Ryan going, hey, let's go to war, yay! But you see Terminator, and it looks, you know, exciting and, you know, and glamorous. You watch a James Bond film, which I've just watched all of them to lead up to the new one, and now it's been delayed by 6 months. So I'm feeling kind of aggressive about that. But there, where it's shown as stylish and humorous, and from attractive perpetrators, and there seem to be very, the consequences are minimal, or they're certainly minimized, and that's the type of media violence that ends up starting to change the attitudes people have about violence from, it's something you should always avoid, to, well, when it's done by the good guy, it's okay.
Let's go to the phones. You're welcome to join our conversation. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Dave is on the line in Norwalk. Hi, Dave.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. So if the brain can distinguish between reality and a trained event, in, say, a violent video game, my question is about, the simulations I was taught in the military, they're like a video game, but they're in the algorithm is built in things like the Geneva Convention. Excuse me, I just went upstairs. And whereas on something like Grand Theft Auto, you're robbing banks and shooting hookers. And so, I mean, I think it's clear to me that if you're tapping the same part of the brain and giving it a pathway to this violence, that you can't say that those games don't teach violence. But I'm certainly not an esteemed scholar like you guys, and I'd like a little more insight on that. I'll take my answer off the air. Thanks.
Thanks a lot for your call, Dave.
Yeah. It's interesting that a lot of the, especially the early, the most popular video games were actually derived from simulations that were, in fact, paid for by the Department of Defense, to create simulations for military training. One of the points that I'd like to make about this particular question is that in the training, whether you're training military people, by using simulations of essentially gaming simulations or whatever, those training scenarios typically include a lot of control issues, right? They're actually training people not just when to shoot, but when not to shoot. And those games are frequently used to train, for example, small unit tactics, communication between people, say, within squads or platoons or, even at the company level. But when those games are marketed to the general public, those aspects of the games are removed because they're not as exciting for, your typical 10-year-old or 14-year-old boy. So all this idea, about training restraint and training control over aggressive responses, all that tends to disappear when it becomes a commercial product. And the Dave, I think it was, who called in, is right that even in games where it's the good guys doing the killing, whether they're killing terrorists or killing the enemy, killing Nazis, or just generally killing bad guys, the message that is being sent is that it's okay when you're the good guy to behave aggressively or violently. And that leads to, you know, some parents, for example, being very opposed to the Grand Theft Auto series where you're playing a criminal, but being perfectly happy to allow their children to play violent games where they're playing the, you know, a U.S. soldier. But the problem is that, you know, if you think for a moment, when was the last time you were really angry at someone? And if you think about that and then say, okay, who was the good guy and who was the bad guy? Well, we typically get angry when we think that we're the good guy and the other person is the bad guy. So if we've learned that it's okay for good guys to behave aggressively towards another person or to behave violently towards another person, that's still not really protecting. You know, that's still increasing the likelihood that you're going to behave aggressively in an inappropriate way.
We pretty much always think we're the good guy.
We always think we're the good guy, or we wouldn't be angry.
So there are a couple other things that you talk about as being reactions to violent media that we haven't talked about. I mean, we've talked about aggressive behavior, so whether that's rudeness or something more, but also getting desensitized to violence can be a very serious effect of this kind of media as well, and it can really reduce our ability to empathize. Tell me more about that.
Yeah, and this is where perhaps the realism does matter a lot. That when we're talking about aggressive behavior, at least in a short-term experimental context, there doesn't seem to be much difference whether you just saw something cartoonish and cute or whether it was, you know, photorealistic. For desensitization, that probably matters a whole lot more, that you get desensitized more if it is more realistic. There are 19 scientifically documented effects of media violence on viewers. And these can be summed up in a couple different ways. You know, the one we've been talking most about is that you're more willing to behave aggressively when provoked. Another is that you actually start seeing the world as a scarier place, that you think you're more likely to be a victim than you really are. A third is that you get desensitized. And not only desensitized to other media violence, but also desensitized to aggression in the real world. So you start being a little less caring. So there have been studies, for example, where after playing a violent video game, you're talking to someone and they say, you know, knock over a cup of pencils, or they drop, their papers. And people who just, you know, saw the violent thing are just less helpful. They don't even see the opportunity to help. They've become desensitized to other people's distress in a way that they're just not noticing the opportunity. And I think that's actually where the biggest effects of media violence are, is in just slightly changing our perceptions, that we see harmful things as less harmful than they really are. And we don't even see opportunities where we could help, just because we've not been practicing paying attention to that.
Can you practice that through video games?
Yes. And so we've done, Craig headed up a study with 7 different countries, and I added an 8th, where across all of these countries, we found that when people are consuming more pro-social media, so these are would-be TV shows or movies or video games where the characters care about each other, pay attention to each other's feelings, take care of each other, that kids gain in empathy, and that gain in empathy then predicts greater helpful and cooperative behaviors.
And you point out in your book that those games have positive effects, but they also have to be really good games. You can't just give a kid a game with a good intention. If it's not a good game, they're not going to play it, and they're not going to like it, right?
Well, this is why no one plays educational games, because they all suck, because they just don't have the budget that a AAA violent game has.
All right. But there can be good games, and there are some good games out there that have those sort of pro-social messages. We only have a few minutes left, and there are so many questions that you answer in the book. And I encourage any parent or person who is concerned about this to dig into that. But toward the end of the book, you left me with what is my greatest concern, and you reinforced that it should continue to be my greatest concern, which is just the vast amount of screen time that kids are engaging in. You seem to consider that to be a much graver risk than even the violent video games.
Well, the book may come across that way. But there's really two things that parents really need to be very, very focused on. One is simply amount of screen time. And that includes even positive screen things, right? There are things that kids need to learn by actually interacting with other kids. We also know that very high screen time is related to attention deficit disorder and similar kinds of impulse control kind of disorders. At this point, we don't know for sure exactly what aspect of screen time does this. My belief is that it has to do primarily with rapidly changing screens. Whether it's TV shows or movies or video games, if everything is happening very, very rapidly, if the images and the sounds and everything are changing very rapidly, what is happening to the brain is that it's learning to be ready to change things very rapidly. But you're not actually training the ability to delay actions very well. So, for example, some of the most positive television shows have been things like Sesame Street, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, Blue's Clues. Those are all pretty slow-paced kinds of media, and they're not relying on quick changes in imagery, which automatically attracts a kid's attention, or they're not relying on rapid changes in volume or sounds. And that's one of the reasons why those shows tend to be very, very good for kids. But again, so there's the two things are, we need to be concerned about how much time, but we also need to be concerned about the actual content. And content is not just, violent versus nonviolent, but, what other kind of messages might be sent. And so we prefer the parents to take a close look at any kind of media that their children may be exposed to or may want to be exposed to, and to consider both what kind of lessons are actually in the media, but also even if you're doing a good job of screening content, you also need to be mindful about the amount of time.
And we have only about 20 seconds left here, but Doug, I'll give you an opportunity to repeat some advice that you've shared on the show before, that one of the easiest ways to limit the kind of violent content that your child is consuming is to make sure those devices are in public spaces and not behind closed doors.
Yeah, and when we put media, we privatize it, parents are less able to monitor and be consistent. And it seems to be, if the media are in children's bedrooms, it's like a turbocharger for all of the other effects. So that is one of the simplest things parents can do, is get them out of kids' bedrooms.
All right. Doug Gentile and Craig Anderson, two of the authors of Game On, Sensible Answers About Video Games and Media Violence. Thank you both for being here today.
Thanks for having us.
This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.